You're listening to the Rogues Radio Podcast, your home for creator interviews, comic book reviews, industry news and commentary, and the Retro Retrospective Movie Review Show. Welcome you to this episode of the Rogues Radio Podcast. I am one of your hosts. My name is Dave Beatty, and for the last, seems like it's been 30 years, maybe not quite 30 years. Anyhow, I've got the gray hairs to prove it either way you want to look at it. I've been an illustrator and graphic designer, worked on a lot of fun stuff, but enough about that. I wanted to introduce my co-host. This is Mr. Eric Alexander. Eric, please tell the folks listening at home a little bit about what you've done as a creative professional.
Thank you, Dave. Yes, I am the chief financial officer of Bad Bob Productions, a small film production company in Phoenix, Arizona. And I am also the associate producer for a feature film called Occupants, which is available on Tubi.
So this is part of the episode where we do the movie news roundup. So tell me, Eric, have you heard anything interesting in the world of TV or movie news?
Yes. Most of this is based on rumor. I want to be really clear about that. This is the stuff that I've kind of heard out there in the Twitterverse, the YouTubeverse, from other channels and other people. It is interesting stuff, so I thought I would just kind of share it with our listeners. First of all, there is apparently some rumors out there that Star Trek, The Rise of Skywalker, is undergoing some reshoots. Have you heard this, Dave? Have you heard this rumor at all?
So you're talking about the Star Wars Rise of Skywalker, right?
Correct. Star Wars the Rise of Skywalker.
I have heard that there's some reshoots going on, but I don't know specifically what that's all about. So.
Well, some folks are reporting that there's actually extensive reshoots, like in terms of the actors are actually being reassembled and they're doing some last minute changes. I personally don't give much credence to that rumor. There are logistical problems with doing that. But the rumor that I heard that I thought was credible is that they're doing a lot of reshoots with CGI and special effects and things like that. So that there is a rumor that there's sort of some scrambling going on, because this certainly would be considered kind of last minute in regards to a production of this magnitude.
Yeah, that's a good word. Magnitude made me think of Akbar. Reshoots of this magnitude.
Exactly. So I do want to regard that mostly as a rumor, but there are some reports that there's some trouble in paradise in terms of the Star Wars. And a little bit brighter news, and also a rumor, but this rumor is backed up with a picture. On Instagram, apparently, one of the crew members for Star Trek Picard they posted on Instagram a picture of a keepsake that they got. which was a clapper. He was one of the those clappers they use for when you're showing anything, television or a movie. And it usually has information about the scenes and all this stuff. Well, what it had instead was a bunch of signatures from cast members of the show, cast members and friends of the show. I guess is the way they put it. One of the signatures was Michael Dorn. So there is a speculation that Michael Dorn might actually be appearing in Star Trek Picard. Now, again, this is rumor. It is rumor that's backed up by something. But even in the post itself, they kind of recognize the fact that this wasn't just exclusively cast members that were signing it. It was basically people that were present at the final episode. So it's very possible that Michael Dorn was simply visiting the set. That happens a lot, in Hollywood.
Yeah, I can see that.
But it is kind of a happy rumor, the possibility that Michael Dorn might be in Star Trek Picard. And of course, the big question that everybody would be asking is, what kind of makeup is he going to be in if he appears? Is he going to look like a classic TNG-style Klingon, or is he going to look like a Discovery Klingon?
Right, which I'll be honest, since they have the merger that's either gone through or going through, that should theoretically make Trek whole again, I would hope it would be the classic look that we've always known him as, so that he's recognizable. So,
and I will present a third possibility, which is very possible, because Michael Dorn has traditionally always been, in Klingon makeup. In fact, he played another character in Star Trek, in Star Trek VI, which I think was supposed to be Worf's great-grandfather or something like that. So he did play a separate character, but he was Klingon. But there is always the possibility with alien characters, they've done this before, not necessarily with a main cast, someone from the main cast, but they've done this before with many of the other actors from Star Trek. He could be appearing, as a regular human, as a totally different character, maybe in a cameo capacity or something like that.
Right. Well, it'd be interesting to see what they do.
I agree.
So on this episode of the Rogues Radio podcast, we're going to be doing the retrospective format with something a little bit different, something a little bit special. But we're going to cover actually two really great science fiction television series. We're going to try and cover both of them in one episode. I'm sure we'll revisit these down the road, but we're going to be talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and we're also going to be talking about Babylon 5. Now, we're going to start with Deep Space Nine. I'm going to read the summary here. It says, in the vicinity of the liberated planet of Bajor, the Federation Space Station Deep Space Nine guards the opening of a stable wormhole to the far side of the galaxy. Now, Deep Space Nine ran for 7 seasons. IMDb is saying it started in 1993 and ran until 1999. We're not going to get too far into the cast and the crew, because when you're talking about 7 seasons of a show, that's a lot to try and cover, but we're going to just do a cursory kind of overview here in these first 2 segments, and then we're going to do a really deep dive with spoilers, and we'll warn you when we get there coming up here in the episode. So let's just talk about how we first, Eric, how did you first hear about Star Trek Deep Space Nine?
Well, of course, it was related to The Next Generation. I remember the buildup. While Next Generation was still airing, they would show ads for Deep Space Nine. And, of course, I was a huge Trekkie, and I tried to make myself aware of anything going on in Star Trek at the time. It was well known and reported that Cole Meany would be leaving The Next Generation to be on Deep Space Nine. So I was very aware of the show before it even came out, just because of all the hype that was going on with Next Generation at the time.
Right. I heard about Deep Space Nine just because of television ads. And I'll be honest with you, I consider myself a Trekkie, even though I think there used to be definitions back in the day that qualified you as a Trekkie or a Trekker or just a Star Trek fan. Which sometimes I clarify people. It's like, man, you're a real Trekkie. It's like, well, you know, I don't know if I technically qualify because there's rules for that. But anyhow, I digress.
We'll have to have a show about that sometime.
We should. I wonder if I still have those like rules somewhere in a scrapbook somewhere here in the studio. But I remember just seeing television ads for it. I remember watching the pilot and being excited for it. I'll be honest, I didn't know much about it. I don't know why I wasn't more well-versed in it, but so with certain things, I'm pretty good about just walking into it and just enjoying it for what it is. So I was just excited we were going to get more Star Trek. I thought it was interesting, too, that it was going to be taking place on a space station, which, you know, would mean, you know, people are coming to the show as opposed to the show venturing out and discovering things. So, but that's how I heard about it, just on television. Wasn't anything like I read it in a magazine or anything that I remember anyway. So that's how I heard about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. So we're going to go ahead and segue. We're going to talk about Babylon 5. Now, Babylon 5 ran for 5 seasons. IMDb is reporting that it went from 1994 to 1998. Babylon 5 was one of those. It was the same thing. I remembered seeing ads for it. I do remember seeing actually some print ads for Babylon 5 in Starlog and stuff like that. I remember people talking about Babylon 5 after it started, within my circle of friends. But that's how I heard about Babylon 5. Eric, how did you first hear about Babylon 5?
I remember it kind of as being like, for lack of a better term, kind of a hum in the background. I was certainly aware that the show existed. I do want to point out that you mentioned that the series started in 1994, but the pilot was actually shown in 1993. It was actually shown about a month after the Deep Space Nine pilot. So they were actually both shown in the same year, very close to each other, the two pilots.
Okay.
I don't remember if I watched the Deep Space Nine pilot when it came out. It was a big deal, and I remember watching that, but I don't remember watching the Babylon 5 pilot. I might have seen like parts of it, maybe as I was channel surfing or something like that, but I don't recall watching it first run. I do recall watching episodes of Babylon 5 here and there, first run. And interestingly enough, with Deep Space Nine, I know I supported it probably at least through the first season when it was first run, but somewhere around the second or third season, I totally dropped out. When it first came out.
Right.
So interestingly enough, with both shows, I didn't really support them that much when they first came out.
I watched a lot of Deep Space Nine. I watched way more Deep Space Nine than Babylon 5. I know Babylon 5, I dropped out somewhere during the second season. And I don't remember what it was about it, but it just, for whatever reason, didn't stick with me very, very good. I found it interesting, but there was just so much stuff on, it seemed like, in those days, which is weird. Now there's like way more, right?
Yeah.
but for some reason, now both of these were, popular during the period when I would call it my roaring 20s, when I was running around and having fun. So maybe I was just out enjoying life. And maybe that's part of why I wasn't too up on the shows. I followed Deep Space Nine a lot closer. And I had a lot of friends that were really big into Deep Space Nine around the time that they did, spoiler alert, the Dominion War storyline, but we're not going to get too heavy into spoilers right now, but when they started the whole Dominion War segment, I had a lot of friends that were really into that. So, a weekend would be, you know, someone having either recorded or, you know, we were all getting together to watch the episodes, you know, and talk about it. And then with Babylon 5, it never really seemed to click really with my circle of friends either. So it wasn't something that was heavily talked about.
Well, this is around the time with both shows. This is around the time that I ventured off to college and ended up in Vermont. So that has a big bearing on how much I was involved with these shows when they first came out. It's funny you mentioned the Dominion War storyline, That storyline didn't actually really start until season four. And by that time, when it was first run, I was no longer watching the show. So it's kind of interesting because I think most people regard that's what they remember from Deep Space Nine. And initially, I didn't even watch that part, you know, when it first came out. I wasn't even aware of it.
Right.
I actually got back into Deep Space Nine years later. I believe it was TNT was doing a segment where they had TNG and Deep Space Nine both airing together, like, you know, one after the other.
Right.
They did that for a couple years. And I happened to come across that because I was a huge TNG fan. And of course, I came into it whenever I came into it, you know, whatever the seasons were going. And so, you know, I'd watch the TNG episode. And then I started watching the Deep Space Nine episode. I'd be like, well, I never saw this episode. Because, you know, like I said, I bailed somewhere around season two or maybe early season three. So there were tons of episodes I hadn't seen. And it turned out I missed all the good stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it turned out like the when it really started to get good, that's all the stuff that I missed.
So now we're going to talk about, again, Star Trek Deep Space Nine and Babylon 5. We're going to talk about how we feel about them today. But this is not going to be a very, like I said earlier, spoiler-heavy conversation. We're going to talk about it in generalities. I'm going to put a bunch of flags and qualifiers on mine because obviously I didn't have time to watch both of these shows before we recorded. But I did watch quite a few episodes. But we're going to talk about it without a bunch of spoilers. But also, too, I realized in the last segment, I did not do the summary off of IMDb for Babylon 5, so I'm going to do that very quickly here. So in the mid-23rd century, the Earth Alliance space station Babylon 5, located in neutral territory, is a major focal point for political intrigue, racial tensions, and various wars over the course of 5 years. So that's the summary according to IMDb. So we're going to talk about how we feel about Deep Space Nine, and we're going to talk about how we feel about Babylon 5 today. But again, we're not going to deep dive into it. The deep dive is coming up with spoilers. All right. So do you mind if I go first, Eric?
Go ahead.
Okay. So I'm going to make mine real quick. Like I said, I watched several episodes of both shows. I did kind of some best of kind of here and there and tried to prep for the show as best I could. But I'm not going to railroad these shows either and make a huge judgment on them because, honestly, I didn't have the chance to watch enough of either one of the shows to really have a super intelligent conversation. So I'm going to be mostly reacting because Eric is much more well-versed in Babylon 5 than I am. But I have seen Deep Space Nine all the way through on multiple occasions. I'd say I'm probably as well-versed on Deep Space Nine as I actually am Next Generation. Deep Space Nine is one of my favorite Star Trek series, for example. But Babylon 5 is the one that I'm not as terribly familiar with. But I will say this. One of the things that's nice that CBS or Paramount or whoever paid for it, I don't know, really great. They're very well presented for a modern audience, especially, I think, original series. Would you agree with that?
Yes, very much so. Yes.
Because the new, like, for example, like if you watch Star Trek back in the day when it was on television and reruns when I was a kid, original series, I mean, most of the ships they were pursuing or the ships that they were battling, they just looked like a little white blip on the screen at best, you know?
That's exactly what I was thinking, too, when you were talking about this. Yep, that's
right. Right. And when you watch original series now with all the CGI, I know some people may not like it, but I love it because it really presents Star Trek in its best form. And I think they've done a great job with preserving Next Generation too. Next Gen looks really great. So both of those shows have benefited from that. My only nitpick right now with both of these shows, to be honest, is the fact that unfortunately the production studios that have produced both of these shows, they haven't really cared to go back in and revisit them, so they really show their age. And that's unfortunate. I was kind of shocked because a lot of times when I watch Deep Space Nine, it's kind of on in the background when I'm working in the studio, so it's kind of like a radio drama. Now, the later episodes are a lot better than the earlier episodes, and I watched a lot more earlier episodes for this than later episodes. And wow, it's wow. they really need to go back in and revisit these. And I wonder if, I mean, I really think Babylon 5 would hugely benefit from this too. They were doing a lot of more forward thinking with their CGI in the episodes that I watched, and it was really interesting, but it's really, really early CGI. But the ship designs and everything are amazing. So, I mean, I can't imagine how great Babylon 5 would be if it was given the original series or the next gen treatment, where they went in and they cleaned everything up and they remastered the sound and they actually gave it new CGI animated segments using the classic designs. I mean, I can't imagine how, I mean, Babylon 5 would feel brand new, and I think a whole new audience would discover it in an amazing way, because the writing is really on point. Even a lot of the early episodes of Babylon 5, I really enjoyed what I watched, but it just really shows its age.
I absolutely agree with you on that, 100%. And I will say, I think Deep Space Nine was sort of one of the last shows that was primarily, you know, last sci-fi shows that was primarily shot with practical sets and models. Obviously, Odo and the shape-shifting was a CGI effect, but they were very early into that. And obviously, that's probably the kind of worst effects on Deep Space Nine. Is those kind of dated CGI effects. Whereas Babylon 5, it was pretty much all CGI as far as the ships went, the exterior shots, it was all CGI. They didn't use any practical models. They had practical sets, you know, here and there as far as when the actors were actually in a room or in a command center, but the exterior stuff was all CGI. And that early CGI does not age well.
Yeah, I would have to say, and that, in all honesty, is going to be my only real nitpick or criticism. And my criticism is not levied at the talent or the crew or the writers or anyone that worked on either one of these shows. It's just, I feel like the studios that own these shows, I think they have some incredibly valuable IP that could find a whole new audience today. But I think that they need to go in and actually clean the shows up and you know, just dress them up for a new audience. That's all. I mean, that's my heaviest criticism, because I feel like the writing and the themes and what I saw of the episodes, it's all still good. It's all still interesting. So it's not a criticism that the crew that did the work. It's just it. I feel like maybe it's a shame that no one's gone back and revisited these and kind of dressed them up, because it's really weird. Did you ever watch Space 1999?
Yes, I watch it sometimes on comedy.
Isn't it like Space 1999 still holds up? Isn't that crazy?
Well, again, I would point out that that's the difference between CGI and practical sets and effects. The practical sets and effects very often hold up better over time than CGI does, because CGI constantly evolves. The practical set effects, you know, they basically, you know, around Star Wars era, they pretty much mastered that, and they're not getting any better. You know what I mean? So, And they're awesome. You know, they're awesome. Those practical effects and techniques that they developed for Star Wars, you know, that they're awesome, and they've translated to other movies and television over the years. You know, you had that big debate in The Force Awakens, because, you know, there was that sort of thing about, oh, well, you know, in the prequels, George Lucas used too much CGI. Let's get back to practical effects, right? So you're always going to have that debate.
Well, but it's just interesting, because it's like when I watched first season episodes of Space 1999, the model work it's so incredibly well photographed and it's so incredibly well put together. I feel like Space 1999, I mean, it could use a little bit of work, but I don't feel like it needs anywhere near as much work as, because I feel like Deep Space Nine is just sitting over here and it's falling apart. I mean, I really feel like they need to go back in and especially some of the early episodes, they need to, you know what I mean? Like, it just feels like it's being neglected.
Well, I want to point out that we haven't watched it, and we've talked about that we need to watch it because I have a copy, but a big appeal of the What We Left Behind DS9 documentary is that they did remaster the footage, the original footage that's in the documentary. They remastered it. This is the first time that there is remastered, you know, high definition Deep Space Nine material available.
Well, I'd definitely be interested to watch that because it's, but that's going to be my main criticism for how I feel like it holds up today. Is I just feel like that because I feel like, I mean, I really think both of these shows could do with just, you know, being cleaned up and being dressed up for a modern audience, because it's weird. Like I said, I watched Space 1999 and I don't think it needs as much work. It's really weird. That's going to be my only, go ahead.
Well, I disagree with you. I agree with you completely. That's my number one criticism of both shows, more so for Babylon 5. I especially think if you're a Babylon 5 fan, it's a much harder pitch for a modern audience because of how dated the effects are.
Right.
Although I would say this, as I mentioned in the previous segment, I didn't really support either one of these shows when they were first run. More so Deep Space Nine, like I said, I think maybe around season two, maybe even up to season three, right before the big story arc actually started, that's when I was into Deep Space Nine and I was watching it and I kind of like was like, huh, whatever, you know, at some point.
Right.
Had other things going on. Like I mentioned, I was going away to college, you know, life. Babylon 5, I hardly supported at all. I remember watching a few episodes. But in terms of the narrative of both of these shows, watching them later, you know, the way I see them today, I think they're excellent. I think they're awesome. The stories are great. The actors are great. But they definitely could use, both of them could use a remaster, but I would say more so with Babylon 5.
So I want to warn the listeners, we are now warping into spoiler zone. There's going to be lots of spoiler discussion. This is going to be the deep dive.
And I do want to give a shout out to the Dave Cullen Show. He's on YouTube. I got most of this list directly from him, but I also want to be clear that he's not the first one to talk about these things. Separately, each of these issues have actually been addressed in other forums, you know, other Twitter tweets, things like that, but he put this stuff together. So most of this list that I'm going to be coming at you with, it's from his show. So we'll start from the beginning, okay? So we in both situations, we have a space station as the main setting. Okay, that's the most obvious thing. But we have space stations both with a single-digit number, and that is the name of the show. Deep Space Nine, Babylon 5. Right off the bat, we've got a major similarity right there. So both of these shows debuted in 1993. As I mentioned, Babylon 5 didn't start as a series right away. It was a sort of a test pilot that was aired about a month after Emissary was aired. So they both pilots aired in the same year within basically a month and a half of each other, for people that weren't aware of that. Both of the space stations are used for trade and diplomacy. They both have kind of a similar reason for being. Both series feature a commander being in charge of the station. You know, traditionally in Star Trek, you always had a captain that was in charge. Curiously, in Deep Space Nine, Sisko starts out as a commander. And interestingly enough, in Babylon 5, the first commanding officer is a commander. He's not a captain. Hmm. These kind of things, like, I think you're starting to get a little picture here. It's like, this is weird. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of things that are similar.
I hadn't quite realized that. But yeah, keep going. I'm listening.
Both of them are sort of caretakers of a jump point. In Deep Space Nine, they have the wormhole. In Babylon 5, and I might be messing the terms up, but they have like these Stargate-type systems. And Babylon 5 is guarding one of these, and in Deep Space Nine, it's guarding a wormhole. So very similar idea. Both of them feature a sort of sub-story about the fact that the commanders have lost their wives. Now, interestingly enough, in Deep Space Nine, it's right off the bat with Sisko. Sisko lost his wife in a Borg attack. In the case of Babylon 5, the show, the first season had a different commander than they had the second season. The first season, it was Commander Sinclair. The second season, it was Commander Sheridan. And Sheridan ended up having a backstory where he had lost his wife. Okay? So there's okay. a similarity there. Both commanders, meaning the original commander of Babylon 5 and Sisko, ended up dating freighter captains. Seriously. They both ended up dating freighter captains.
That's, yeah.
Both of them introduced warships in season 3 of their respective shows. In Deep Space Nine, it was the Defiant. In Babylon 5, it was the White Star. So they both introduced a warship, a cutting-edge, brand-new warship in season 3. So we also have both captains, both commanders, ended up being spiritual leaders who ascended. That's a little bit of a spoiler, but not too much. That's not really telling you too much. But both of them were spiritual leaders, and they ascended at some point. They both obviously involve spiritual beings. In Deep Space Nine, we had the prophets, whereas in Babylon 5, we had the Vorlons, and they were both spiritually based, non-corporeal. Is that the right term?
Because it's like... And we're in spoiler territory here, so, but yeah, I think I can't remember his name, but it was one of the main characters. He was literally like a space angel in Babylon 5.
Correct, right, and obviously we have the prophets on Deep Space Nine. Both of them had enemies. The prophets had the Pares, and the Vorlons had the Shadows, and they were both very similar in terms of being very dark, malevolent forces. We have a situation where both space stations are run by essentially an Earth-based government. In Babylon 5, they had the Earth Alliance. And obviously, in Star Trek, you have the Federation, which is based on Earth. So both stations are run by an Earth-based organization. Both stations are run alongside a very religious aliens. In the case of Deep Space Nine, you have the Bajorans, who are very religious, and in the case of Babylon 5, you have the Minbari. The Minbari are also very religious. In fact, the main Minbari character is part of the religious caste in Minbar for Babylon 5.
Right.
Both of them feature a long war story arc, and both of them have a 6-part series in their second to last season. Literally, they have a 6-parter in both shows that's integral to their war story plots. And that's in the second to last season of both shows. Both of them feature a female second in command, who in both cases are women who have lost someone or lost something very precious in a previous war. They both have that similarity, the two second officers.
Right.
And then also there's this one that's kind of really obvious and really low-hanging fruit. The characters are nothing the same, but they actually have a Lita, spelled L-Y-T-A in Babylon 5. They have a Lita in Deep Space Nine, spelled L-E-E-T-A. They also have a Dukat in both. They have a Dukat spelled D-U-K-A-T for Deep Space Nine. And for Babylon 5, it's like, I can't even read my own writing, but it's a different spelling, but it's the same pronunciation. The characters are nothing like each other, but the fact that they have the same weird alien names is another kind of weird coincidence.
Right.
And in point of fact, the actress who played Lita on Babylon 5, her name is Patricia Tallman. There's a video of her on a red carpet, so it's pretty easy to find. You just put like red carpet Patricia Tallman, and she really gets into this. Like, she talks about how she really feels like something fishy was going on, you know. But particularly talking about the fact that they had a character with the same name as her. Now, granted, right, her character, I want to specify her character on B5, which she's in the pilot. She doesn't become a regular until
isn't
later,
she
but
part
she's
of like the Psycor or whatever it is? Like the
oh, okay. Kind of. She is. She is part of the Psycor, which every telepath is in Babylon 5. Every human telepath is supposed to be part of the Psycor. But she's not a psy-cop, so it's kind of different. So she's a, so she's a telepath, but she's supposed to be kind of doing more like diplomatic things. She ends up having a lot to do with the Vorlons. She ends up very integral to that whole plot. Whereas Lita in Deep Space Nine was a Dabo girl who ended up, you know, marrying Ron.
Okay.
So the characters don't really have any similarities, but obviously the names are very similar. So those are the big ones that have been discussed like all over the place. I'm just kind of curious how you feel hearing all those put together.
Well, I do know at one point there was a I don't know what you want to call it. There was an issue because according to something I read, I guess at one point, J. Michael Straczynski or JMS, who created Babylon 5, I think he at one point had actually brought Babylon 5 to Paramount. Or CBS or whatever, and pitched it.
It was Paramount at the time.
Okay.
I want to remind people that CBS has not been involved with Star Trek production until Discovery.
Okay.
Nothing Star Trek was ever produced by CBS. It was all Paramount and Desilu. So we got three studios that have produced Star Trek.
Okay.
Desilu, Paramount, and now CBS. But yes, it is true that J. Michael Straczynski, the creator of Babylon 5, did a pitch to Paramount. And he actually pitched this long before Deep Space Nine was a thing, where Deep Space Nine had been greenlit or anything.
Right.
And he came in with a very detailed pitch.
Right. And so I know that I think at one point there was either a threat of legal action, or there was legal action, or I remember,
depending who you talk to.
Yeah, and I read this I actually didn't read this in prep for this show. I read that a long time ago, because I remember. It's just weird. It's like I wasn't. I guess it's because I didn't watch the shows more closely. I didn't really realize that there were so many similarities. I mean, it's obvious that, you know, with Babylon 5, they're trying to play to the Star Trek crowd. But at the same point, the way the show's put together, it has more in common with not really it's not a traditional Star Trek production by any stretch of the imagination. You know what I mean? But you could see where it would appeal to a similar kind of crowd. But at the same point, it's not Star Wars either. It's definitely more Trek. Wouldn't you agree? It's from its inception, it felt more Trek than like Star Wars.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah.
I mean, I always make the argument, though, that Star Wars is sci-fi fantasy, so I kind of put it in a different pile.
Right. It is weird. I didn't realize it was that many similarities.
Well, it's also very important to point out that Babylon 5 started out as a serialized show from the very beginning. If you watch the show in the middle, you're going to be lost. You know, there are certainly episodes that stand alone, and you can watch them without knowing anything else, and you know you can get by. But that is not how the show is meant to be watched. From the very beginning, Babylon 5 was supposed to be a serialized show where it was a continuous story arc. In fact, the term that Straczynski uses is it was supposed to be a novel on television.
Right.
And this is one thing that I now. Deep Space Nine fans will say, "Well, yeah, well, Deep Space Nine, you know, did that too," and the thing is, they didn't do that at first. The first two or three seasons are not serialized; they're episodic.
Right.
They are meant to be standalone episodes. There are story arcs within the first few seasons of Deep Space Nine. You know, particularly, you know, there's kind of like the story of what the Bajorans are going through in terms of trying to build themselves up and the instability of their government. There are some story arcs there, but they have nothing to do with the stuff that everybody remembers in terms of the Dominion War. I mean, nothing.
Right.
You know what I mean? The Dominion War stuff doesn't really start until season four when Worf joins the cast.
Right, right.
So I want to point that out because a lot of people will always be saying, well, you know, Deep Space Nine was episodic too at the same time. No, it wasn't. It didn't start out. I mean, it was serialized. People say it was serialized. It had a big story arc. It wasn't. It was episodic when it first started. And Babylon 5 was not. Babylon 5 from the very beginning was meant to be a serialized story where, you know, you were supposed to be watching the whole show.
Right. And it, you know, it's weird because I know that it was meant to be, serialized. The comparison I kept coming up to, which would probably strike people as odd, is I kept thinking of Hill Street Blues as I was watching Babylon 5. Because
it's interesting.
Like, it's just for some reason, it's what it struck me as, like a start, like a space version. Well, not Hill Street Blues had similar things. Like there was a lot of political machinations going on. There was interpersonal stuff going on. There was problems in the streets, because the cops were always in conflict with the gangs and there were always shocking deaths and crazy reveals, and you'd come to love a character and they'd kill him in a crazy fashion. And as I was watching a lot of these Babylon 5 episodes, for some reason, I kept thinking of Hill Street Blues. Rightly or wrongly, that's what I was thinking of.
Well, I think you have a great point there, because I think Hill Street Blues is regarded as one of the first shows, dramatic shows, that was serialized and wasn't considered a soap opera. Do you know what I mean? Because right. That format has always existed in soap operas. Soap operas have always been serialized. They're a continual story that constantly changes, right, as casts leave and all that kind of stuff. But it's a continuous story that's always going on. But those are called soap operas. And I think Hill Street Blues was actually one of the very first shows that was not considered a soap opera that did that.
Right.
So I think that's actually a very good point to bring up.
So I'm going to call Red Alert Battle Stations. In this segment, we're going to be still continuing to talk about Deep Space Nine and Babylon 5, but we're going to look at some, I don't know what you want to call it. We'll call it some conflicts, some different things. Eric, how do you want to start talking about this sort of battle station segment here?
Well, I guess another way to put it is, who did it better, right? Because there are some very similar things between Deep Space Nine and Babylon 5. Outside of even whether you say one stole from the other, they both did similar things with different executions, and I just wanted to point a couple of them out. So one I wanted to point out is Section 31 versus the Psi Corps, and specifically the Psi Cops. Section 31 is a concept that was introduced late in Deep Space Nine, I think in Season 5, I want to say. Season 5 or 6. Late in the series, they introduced the concept of Section 31, which I think I've briefly mentioned. That's one of the most controversial things in Deep Space Nine for me personally. I have a lot of issues with Section 31 even existing in the world of Star Trek and the Federation, okay? But it's very similar in execution to the Psi Corps and to the Psi Cops in particular, in terms of the way they operate, in terms of sort of the malevolence of the organization and the fact that it kind of operates as it's almost like its own government. You know what I mean? There's no, I know right now with Discovery, they're trying to make Section 31 into the CIA. That was not the original premise in Deep Space Nine at all. Section 31 is not answerable to anyone. They kind of exist in parallel to the Federation government and Starfleet. They're their own thing, and they're answerable to no one. And sometimes they will work with Starfleet, and sometimes they don't. And the Psi Corps is very much presented in a similar way in Babylon 5. So I wanted to point that out. Also, I wanted to, this one is kind of like stretching a little bit, but I see it. There's also a lot of similarities between the Maquis and the uprising on Mars in Babylon 5. The interesting thing there is in Deep Space Nine, ironically, which is Star Trek based, supposed to be sort of a more optimistic view, and these are the good guys. In Deep Space Nine, the Federation is opposing the Maquis, who are the freedom fighters who are basically being oppressed by the Cardassians. Whereas in Babylon 5, with the Mars uprising, the Babylon 5 is actually supporting the rebellion. In fact, Babylon 5 eventually becomes the focal point of the rebellion, and it all starts with the bombing of Mars. So it's like a complete role reversal. See what I'm saying? Whereas the Deep Space Nine, they were actually chasing the rebels. They were chasing the freedom fighters. in Babylon 5, they became the freedom fighters.
Right, yeah, because they actually, didn't they like sequester themselves or split from Earth or something?
And correct.
They were kind of like on their own, so.
Correct. So I think that's a very interesting one too. And then the big one that I wanted to mention, and I want to let our listeners know, Dave and I didn't talk about this beforehand, so I'm throwing this at him cold. You know, you'll hear his reaction, live, as you will. You remember the actor Robert Foxworth? You may have remembered him from Falcon Crest. I grew up watching that with my mom, so that's what I remember him from. Like many actors in Babylon 5 and Deep Space Nine, he was on both shows. We could actually do a whole show on all the different characters and actors that were on both shows. Okay, right. The most prominent being Majel Roddenberry. Okay, she was actually on Deep Space Nine and she was on Babylon 5, and of course she has the Roddenberry name. Right. She was on both shows. Now, Robert Foxworth is one of those people. Now, he started out on Babylon 5, okay? He was on Babylon 5 first, and he was a general. He was basically supposed to be like the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, like the number one general in the Earth Alliance, okay?
Okay.
And are you familiar with his role in Babylon 5? Have you seen any of those episodes?
Not too much. I recognize the name, but it doesn't... Because like I said, I didn't get a chance to deep dive too far into Babylon 5. I mean, most of the stuff I watched was kind of first season, and then I kind of hit some greatest hits here or there. But no, I'm not too terribly familiar with his role in Babylon 5, no.
So this is definitely big spoiler territory for the story of Babylon 5. So if people don't want to hear this, I understand. You can click out right now, because this is really important for the story of Babylon 5. The character that he plays is basically, like I said, kind of like the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. He's a prominent general in the Earth Alliance. What is happening is there has been a coup. The president of Earth has, the vice president of Earth killed the president to become president. Okay? I'm not sure if you're familiar with that part of the plot. So now, Foxworth's character, he basically has kind of figured this out. And he is trying to enlist other people in the military to oppose the new president. Okay?
Okay.
So he is basically trying to do a coup against another coup. That's probably the best way of looking at it, because obviously the vice president killing the president was a coup. And now he's trying to use the military to get rid of this guy that killed the legitimate president. Okay? And he's trying to do it in a subtle way because he doesn't want to go up against him guns blazing, without evidence, that kind of thing. He's working on an assumption. And he's recruited kind of the Babylon 5 people into this. In fact, it's one of the main reasons that Sheridan winds up as commander of Babylon 5 is because Foxworth's character wanted to put someone in there that he knew he could count on. Sheridan has a big backstory that I won't even get into here that makes him very special. So does Sinclair, by the way. Sinclair, the original commander, has a backstory that makes him very special. They're both very special. So,
right.
But specifically, Foxworth's character has put Sheridan in this position because he knows what's coming. He knows that there's going to be probably a civil war at some point. Okay.
Right.
So this is going on with them, and eventually, what happens is, as the story arc progresses, eventually the president of Earth decides to declare martial law, and at that point, people have to start choosing sides. That's, I mentioned earlier, like the bombing of Mars, that's a big issue. That's actually what pretty much gets Babylon 5 on the side of the separatists, if you will, to secede and all that kind of stuff. Well, there's a very interesting way that Deep Space Nine went about this. They did a crew story themselves. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think so.
And they used the same actor. Only in Deep Space Nine, Foxworth is the instigator of the coup. He is trying to get rid of the president, as he is in Babylon 5, but this time he's trying to get rid of the legitimate president, okay, because right. He is worried about a Dominion infiltration of the founders, of the changelings, okay? That's what that story is about, okay? And I just think it's amazing. Literally, Foxworth was supposed to come back to finish his story arc, and he declined because Deep Space Nine had snatched him away to do their own version of that.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Because you know the episodes I'm talking about. It was a two-parter in Deep Space Nine. Paradise Lost and Homefront, I think, were the name of the episodes.
Yeah.
And in that story, they basically took, you know, Foxworth, and he was kind of the same character. He was kind of depicted as kind of like the head of Starfleet, like the main admiral in Starfleet, you know? Again, kind of like the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. He's the head of Starfleet, and he basically decides that he is going to depose the president of the Federation because he's concerned about this Dominion infiltration, whereas in Babylon 5, he was the good guy going against an illegitimate president who had taken over the Earth Alliance.
That's crazy. That's completely crazy.
And I never hear anybody talk about that. Like, I don't know of any YouTube videos about that. I don't see buzz on the internet about that. The main piece that I got was on the Babylon 5 wiki. They do mention specifically that Foxworth was supposed to come back, but Deep Space Nine grabbed him.
Right. Well, it's, you know, what you found is so much better than what I noticed, because what I noticed is stupid compared to that. But because that's terribly interesting and a very, very, I mean, that's such a coincidence.
That's not a coincidence. I'll make that accusation straight up, that there's no way that they decided to take the same actor, basically put him in the same role, but make him a bad guy in their version, whereas he was supposed to be a good guy on the other in Babylon 5.
I know, but you understand what I mean. That's just crazy, because the one thing I thought of is a kind of a coincidence, like as you were going through everything. I did think it was kind of interesting, you know, revisiting the whole the Psi-Corps, the Psi-Cop idea and the Section 31 idea. It is interesting and kind of a weird thing, because you have Walter Koenig, who played that role that he kind of really was well known for Babylon 5. But in the original series, he was the fresh-faced, right out of the academy, excited for adventure. You know what I mean? Like let's get on to the new frontier. I'm excited, you know, officer. But in Babylon 5, he's playing this character where, you know, he's kind of, you know, in Section 31, and then you go over to Deep Space Nine, and in Deep Space Nine, unless I'm mistaken, it's Bashir, right? Who's pulled in to Section 31.
Yes, he's recruited. That's how the whole thing starts.
Yeah.
Section 31 is...
Because
there was already a sort of subplot of Bashir's fascination with spycraft. That's one of the reasons he's such good friends with Garak. And also he does his little James Bond ripoff, you know, holodeck simulation.
Right.
And that's...
But it's interesting because he's the fresh-faced, he's just out of the academy. He's excited to be on the frontier. You know what I mean? Like he's very much that. It's just a weird thing when you think about it. You know, now obviously he's a doctor, and of course Chekhov was a helmsman. But you know what I mean? It's just kind of, or a navigator. It's just kind of weird. You know, that thinking about it, because I was thinking about that as you were running through the Section 31, and then the Psi-Corps, the Psi-Cop idea, you know what I mean? I was like, oh, that's interesting. And I started thinking about, you know, Walter Koenig, and then thinking about, you know, Bashir's character, and it's like there's something
there.
Yeah,
there's definitely,
you know,
a connection, I think. You know, the fact also that, you know, obviously, there's also a story out there, I don't know if you even heard this one before, but there was an idea to bring Walter into Deep Space Nine. Have you ever heard this?
No.
Okay, so there was actually a pitch. In fact, I think Walter has actually confirmed this, that yes, he did meet with somebody from Paramount, someone who was involved with Deep Space Nine, and they actually discussed the idea of bringing him on the show. And the pitch, as I understand it, it was basically that Walter was going to be a prisoner, and he had been rotting on some planet for decades, and they finally rescue him, and he was going to be... he was going to have been changed by his experience and embittered and basically become kind of a nemesis. And the funny thing is, that's kind of what he is on Babylon 5. You know what I mean? And so obviously they decided not to do it on Deep Space Nine. And I can't help but wonder if a big part of not bringing him and doing that was, oh, well, it's too similar to Babylon 5. Maybe people will really see it now if we do that, you know? So, but yeah, that was the idea. That was the pitch for the story of how to bring Chekhov to Deep Space Nine.
Well, it's interesting because I never really realized how much these two shows shared or did similar things. You know what I mean? Like it does make you think it's not just a coincidence. It does, you know, obviously at the very least, one is definitely inspiring the other, you know, and you know, who's taking the lead at what point to do what is the only thing, but it's pretty obvious they were pulling from each other or one was pulling from the other
it's kind of hard to argue really when you have it all kind of presented in front of you, and there are things like what the stuff we're talking about with the Psi-Core that could be neither here nor there, you know what I mean, but it is interesting. And then when you put it with everything else, that's where it becomes more of a convincing argument, I guess, because you just got to put it all together. Like I said, I'm fascinated by the fact that no one has really delved into these two story arcs in both shows involving the coup, and the way that it was treated on Deep Space Nine, and the way it was treated on Babylon 5. Babylon 5, it's a central part of the story. It's like it's huge. In Deep Space Nine, it's almost kind of a throwaway. You know what I mean? It's kind of like just something that they kind of wanted to address. But the fact they use the same actor is just the big smoking gun to me. You know what I mean? That something was going on there. The fact that he couldn't even come back to finish his story arc on Babylon 5 because he was doing the Star Trek episodes for Deep Space Nine. I think I'm like, I rest my case, you know?
Right. No, yeah, here's my big takeaway from all this. I just realized I need to revisit Babylon 5 and work my way through the show and you know, just kind of explore it. It's interesting. It's weird that Babylon 5 is one of those shows that I just, because typically, almost anything science fiction, I roll up my sleeves and I'm all in. But for some reason, during that period of my life, Babylon 5 was not holding my interest. But after having this discussion with you, I realized that I owe it to myself to sit down and revisit Babylon 5 and work my way through it and see what's there to discover. And especially because I enjoyed Deep Space Nine so much, and these two shows are so similar, it just sounds like someone else's takeoff of Deep Space Nine, or vice versa. That's kind of my point. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
they are very different, though, in terms of execution. And again, we can have another part of this is to say, well, which one did it better? Because you have these very similar situations, and you can say, well, which one did a better job of presenting that? You know. And that's actually a great fan debate to say, when you take these kind of very similar kind of approach or similar stories or similar concepts and say, well, here's how they did it on Babylon 5. Here's how they did it on Deep Space Nine. And ultimately, kind of just say, which one do you like better? Which one do you think did a better job exploring that particular idea?
Right. Well, I definitely need to revisit Babylon 5 before I could even attempt to even have a starting point for that. I'm not gonna, like I said at the beginning of the episode, I'm not gonna pass judgment on both shows and, you know, as in terms of who's better than the other, just because I haven't seen enough of Babylon 5 to really, you know what I mean, to really measure it up against Deep Space Nine. And like I said, both of the shows, and my one criticism is just, I wish that the studios would go back and remaster both of these shows and you know, give them essentially a fresh coat of paint, so that new audiences could come in and discover them and not have it hampered by, you know, the fact that the shows, you know, show their age. You know, it's weird because recently I rewatched Galaxy Quest, And, you know, in Galaxy Quest, they have a lot of fun with the idea that they're you know, from an old TV show, right? And then they play the segments, and the segments are meant to be really old and kind of silly and whatever else. And it's so strange because they've done such a great job of remastering, again, original series and next gen. I don't feel like that way with either one of those. And then there's other shows that are older that I don't feel like they show their age quite as bad. But it's weird. These are the two shows that when I watch them, you know what I mean? They feel like that. You know, I guess that's what's kind of weird about it is I haven't actually sat down and looked at the presentation of Deep Space Nine, because it's like I said, it's like a radio drama. It's on in the background, and I turn around and I watch those important scenes, which for me are usually dramatic moments. You know, there's a lot of fun stuff in the Dominion War, but I think that, you know, that stuff holds up still a little bit better. But I wish that they would, the studios would revisit these and put a little bit of money into dressing them up a little bit, because I have a feeling that they could find a whole new audience. And but in the case of Babylon 5, maybe that universe could be looked at anew, you know, not re-envisioned, but maybe there's some more stories that could be told, you know what I mean, with some of those alien races and whatever, and explore it even further. Because I know they did several, I think, TV movies or something with Babylon 5.
Yes, they did several, I think, direct-to-DVD movies, and then there were also, I believe, at least one spin-off series. I think there was a pilot for another one. So there were at least two attempts to do revivals of some sort, spin-offs of some sort. So, yeah, actually, the Babylon 5 world is pretty extensive. There's quite a few movies, and like I said, at least one other series and one other pilot.
Well, and whenever we talk about these, you know, because I'm such a comic book fan, it always makes, because both of these shows had comic book series, and it makes me wonder what it would be like to, you know, track down some of the Babylon 5 comics, for example, because I'm really curious now after the conversation we've had about exploring the Babylon 5 universe a lot more than what I have. But it's interesting. It's interesting. I mean, your goal was not to sell me on Babylon 5, but now I realize that maybe it's a disservice that I'm not more heavily steeped in it. So I feel like I need to revisit it for sure. I want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Rogues Radio Podcast. We've got something fun coming up for the next episode. Eric and I have been talking, and we're going to do the Dark Crystal Age of Resistance, which is currently on Netflix. That'll be kind of interesting, Eric, because neither one of us knows much of anything about it.
Exactly. So, yeah, we'll be in some definite new territory.
For sure. Sounds really cool. So again, I want to thank you for listening. My name is Dave Beatty, and I've been one of your hosts. You can learn more about me, see some of my work, find links to the video version of this show, as well as all kinds of other fun things on my website. That's at davebeatty.com. That's www.davebeatty.com. I want to thank Eric Alexander for coming back on the show with more excellent co-hosting duties. Thanks again for being on the show here, Eric.
Dave, you are too kind, and I would like to let everybody know that the best way to get a hold of me is on Twitter. That's at BassGod14, at BASSGOD14 on Twitter, and then also to keep in mind Bad Bob Productions, my production company in Arizona.